Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dusty. I'm sitting in for Gwen today. It's Friday, the day after Turkey Day, as everybody in the world, not everybody in the world, but most people in America celebrate. I'm sure there's not too many listeners, as most people are spending time and or traveling with their family and friends. Our opening song was from Nickelback. It's called We Must Stand Together, which, by the way, they played at halftime yesterday during the first NFL game of the day. I'm just wondering how many people caught the meaning of the song and the lyrics. That's something that comes to mind for me when I heard it yesterday. It's probably one of the reasons why I played it today. Speaking of Black Friday, that's something that the retail industry has created, and that's what the corporate media likes to call it. It's really a bullshit day, as only the big box stores and the corporate-owned publicly traded stores use this day to push their subpar merchandise shipped in exclusively for today. When they do have good products available, like a name brand computer or a flat screen, they are in very short supply, and that simply is a lure for the sales shopper, you know, basically like 10 in each store as an example. So, you know, I hope most of you stayed home because Black Friday really is a bullshit thing created to lure y'all into the store. The interesting thing about Black Friday is that the Occupy movement, Occupy Wall Street movement, is protesting against the big box stores and the corporate-owned stores today. And there's actually a website up against that so-called movement. So, and I'm looking around at my notes, which suck today because I'm really not feeling too well. And I can't find my notes on it. So, oh, wait a minute. I know where they are. The other thing we're going to talk about today is how President Obama got mic checked, which something that was really entertaining to me and lifted my little black heart. It warmed the cockles of my little black heart, as I put it. But Black Friday, like I was started to say, you know, you're merely supporting the 1% if you go to one of the corporate-owned big box or large chain stores. If you must go out, please try to hit up a small, locally owned business, okay? Those are the stores who really need our money, not the big stores by any stretch of the imagination. The way I look at it, you know, we really need to support the smaller stores. CNN has a write-up, actually, on the whole thing, and there's a site that you can go to. The site is called StopBlackFriday.com. A short piece of the CNN write-up, it says, the Occupy movement is taking one of the biggest retail days of the season and calling on protesters to occupy major retailers on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Occupy Black Friday by occupying / boycotting large chain stores and publicly traded retail is the message posted on the website, which, like I said, is called StopBlackFriday.com. I'm proud to say that even Bakersfield's own Occupy Wall Street group picketed Walmart last night from 9 p.m. to midnight. Sadly, there wasn't too many people that showed up there, but hey, at least we got out there and we did it. And, you know, like I like to call us Redneckistan here, but if we can get out there and do it, then so can any of the other 200 and more, you know, cities that are supporting Occupy Wall Street. On the Big Black, on the StopBlackFriday.com site, it gives you a list of different stores and different happenings that are going on. It says there's a Stop Black Friday movement in Boston, in Seattle, New York City, Boise, Idaho, and Washington, D.C. It says you can also follow them on Facebook and Twitter. It also says to bring your cell phone so that you can record any police misconduct or any crazy person attempting to physically harm you, which is what worried me about the Bakersfield guys that went last night, because we only had a couple of them down there, and I was really worried that, you know, some of the idiots from Redneckistan would go off on them, because believe me, they go crazy here for Black Friday. Literally, they set up tents and they wait for days and days and days for it. So, you know, there's the Black Friday crap for you. Now, as far as Obama getting mic checked, which, like I said, warmed the cockles of my little black heart, he was in New Hampshire the other day, and Think Progress wrote a report on it. It says the protesters aligned with Occupy Wall Street interrupted President Obama at a speech in New Hampshire this afternoon. And Obama, it wasn't this afternoon, it was during the week last week. And Obama responded by telling the demonstrators that they are the reason he wanted to get into public service. Right, sir. A few minutes into a speech at a high school, a protester shouted, "Mic check," and others joined in with shouts. The crowd quickly drowned the protesters out, of course, with chants of "Obama, Obama." But a few minutes later, Obama said, "Families like yours, young people like the ones here today, including the ones who were just chanting at me, you're the reason that I ran for office in the first place." Now, I want you to remember, he was out there stumping for votes. So he was quite cordial to the voters, the protesters, unlike the GOP clowns lately, who have also been getting mic checked by various groups, including Occupy Wall Street supporters. And there's been quite a few of them who've been getting mic checked. There's also a photo in the Think Progress article of the note that one of the protesters handed to Obama. after the end of his speechifying, which was when he was most likely out there kissing babies and shaking hands, Dave, over at Slate magazine, Dave Weigel actually put a copy of the note up, and I included a copy of it on my article, and it says over 4,000 peaceful protesters have been arrested while bankers continue to destroy the American economy with impunity. You must stop the assault on our First Amendment rights. Your silence sends a message that police brutality is fine. The banks got bailed out and we got sold out. It's a pretty good article, like I said, on Slate by Dave Weigel. It's called The Occupy Drift from Wall Street to a Police State. And he goes on to talk about a lot of things that are going on. He even links to the Think Progress article that I just mentioned. He also mentions Matt Taibbi. And Matt Taibbi does a lot of work on supporting the Occupy Wall Street and a lot of stories on it. And one of the good parts of Matt's latest story that Dave Weigel links to is, not to belabor the point, but the person who commits fraud to obtain food stamps goes to jail, while the banker who commits fraud for a $1 million bonus does not. Or, if you accept aid in the form of Section 8 housing, the state may assist on its right to conduct warrantless compliance checks, searches of your home at any time, but if you take billions in bailouts, you do not even have to open your books to the taxpayer who is the de facto owner of your company. The state wants to retain the power to make these subjective decisions because being allowed to selectively enforce the law means they have despotic power. And who wants to lose that? And you got to admit, Matt Taibbi's got a hell of a point and Dave Weigel's got a hell of an article. Everything I bring up on the show, once again, I will have links to on my website after the show is over. So you don't have to worry about missing anything. I will be more than happy to make sure you don't miss a damn thing. There is some good news on the front, though, about the one percenters getting popped. There's a one percenter by the name of Rajat Gupta. He's a former Goldman Sachs board member. He was accused of insider trading, and they have his official federal portrait over at the Smoking Gun. His official federal portrait means they have his the picture of when he arrested him. You know, that lovely little picture they take of your front view and your side view, your arrest photo. It says, a former Goldman Sachs member is pictured above in a United States Marshal's mugshot, snapped after he was indicted last month for allegedly passing on corporate secrets to Raj Rajatman, the billionaire hedge fund titan sentenced to 11 years in prison for insider trading. The 62-year-old Gupta, who once headed the McKinsey & Company consulting firm, has been accused of tipping Rajatman to confidential information about Goldman and Procter & Gamble. Right now, unfortunately, Rajat is free on $10 million bail. So that boy could get his hands on some money, some big money, really quick. His trial, however, is scheduled for U.S. District Court in Manhattan in April. So if you want to look at the picture of his ass and his mugshot on the Smoking Gun, I'll be more than happy to have that link up there for you to look at, too. You have to keep remembering that there's a scorecard being kept track that there's over 4,000 people arrested so far supporting Occupy Wall Street, but you're not finding any banksters being arrested. A lot of these arrests happened before Occupy Wall Street began, but good old Raj's arrest just happened recently. So I guess you could say that it's 4,000 arrests to one arrest because this article is dated recently. So So there is at least one insider, one of the 1%ers has got his ass put in jail for pulling something illegal, and we can all thank Buddha for that one, which I really do. The other thing that I was going to bring up today is that the libertarian who owns Overstock.com, the CEO, he supports Occupy Wall Street, and he is definitely, most definitely, one of the 1%ers. His name is Patrick Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E, and he was talking to the Young Turks host, Cenk Uygur, on Tuesday night at the Occupy Wall Street demonstration in New York's Zuccotti Park. He describes himself as a libertarian who was fond of economic ideas of Milton Friedman. "I think there's a difference between capitalism and Wall Street," he says. "I'm good with capitalism. I have a lot of trouble with Wall Street." What I'm going to play for you now is the interview between Cenk and Patrick, the CEO of Overstock. Here it is.
Welcome to my cradle. Let's go see my rides. This is my hot lava Scion XP. Straight from Hades. It's got a blazing hot finish, suede-style trimmed seats, plenty of room for a god and his crew.
Did you get all up in that?
Good.
I'll be over on the YouTubes.
Welcome to my cradle. Let's go see my rides.
Great. It didn't record it right. Thank you so much. God damn it. I have it somewhere that I'll have to try to play it for you. Let me see if I can play it where you can actually hear it. Here it is. Let me go ahead and play it and see if it comes out okay. You guys tell me if you can hear it. Come on. Nope, it's not coming out. God damn it. I was really hoping, because it's a really great article. They have it over at Raw Story. anyway, let me give you the gist of the... Oh, it pisses me off. I've had a really bad week, folks. Like I said, he said, "I'm good with capitalism. I have a lot of trouble with Wall Street." He added that Wall Street had Washington, D.C. by the throat and was not allowing the government to properly regulate the financial sector. The core message, which is what I understand to be the core value of Occupy Wall Street, is right on the money, Byrne noted. He also said that the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933, which I hope we all remember that one, that's the one that Bill Clinton helped, bury. He also says that the Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 should be reenacted. And that was the law that controlled speculation and placed other regulations on the banking industry. And it was repealed in 1999. And like I said, they do have the video, which is up on Current TV. Maybe I can play it that way. Let me see if I can get to it from there. Because it's Cenk's show, by the way, will start December 5th. On Current TV, and it starts right before it comes on, right before Keith Olbermann's show. Anyway, let me see if I can play this video without anything happening at this point, without anything going wrong. Let me see.
I've been actually on Fox a couple times defending Occupy Wall Street. Don't know if you caught any of that. So I wanted to come down and inform myself and pick up the literature and talk to people.
Are you in the top 1%?
Yeah, probably. All right, but it's good to see that the top 1% joined the 99%.
We'd want to be 100%, right? Doing the right thing.
So,
right, exactly. So what about this protest drew you and that you think is worthwhile?
Well, I think you and I were occupying Wall Street about 4 years ago. We had sort of a two-man Occupy Wall Street going. I've been very critical of Wall Street, as you know, as have you been, for 5 or 6 years. I think there's a difference between Wall Street and capitalism. I'm good with capitalism. I have a lot of trouble with Wall Street. And the main event is, in my mind, there's two power centers in this country, Wall Street and Washington, D.C. And in the last few decades, Wall Street has gotten the upper hand on Washington, has it by the throat, not letting them regulate the institutions, design the institutions properly. So that core message, which is what I understand to be the core value of Occupy Wall Street, is I think right on the money. I think they're right on the money with that now. Clearly, there's a lot of other political currents coming in here that I have different feelings about, right. But the main message is 100% correct. Wall Street has gotten Washington by the throat, and they're letting them get away with murder.
You know, Patrick, isn't this the one thing that can unify all Americans, conservatives, liberals, libertarians, that we don't want our politicians bought?
Oh, that's it. You got it. That's it. Yeah, you've teased me on your show before about being a Milton Friedman guy. I'm a total Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman was my friend. But, you know, Milton Friedman would have hated the idea of regulatory capture, he called it. You know, the idea that our regulators have become bootlicks, lapdogs, basically, of Wall Street.
So, and you and I have had this discussion before, but I wonder if you have any new nuance to it. How do you do the regulation without, in your estimation, over-regulating? So how do you draw that balance? Because you need some cops on Wall Street. How do you do that?
Great question. I think, in general, the argument about more regulation, less regulation, is a little bit off-kilter. The question is institutional design. We need fundamental institutional reform. For example, I think the SEC should be part of the DOJ, because the only thing that scares Wall Street guys are orange jumpsuits. So the SEC should be part of the DOJ. Is that more regulation, less? It's really not, or it's just redesigning the institution.
So, I think that there should be a limit on leverage so that there's not too much risk-taking, especially with depositors' money. Do you agree with that?
Totally. Go back to Glass-Steagall. Get serious about the Volcker Rule. Go back to Glass-Steagall. Reduce leverage. The real problem deep down is that there's great hidden risk built into the system that people either don't think is there or they do know is there, but they have ways of disguising it to profit from. So the system has to be redesigned to reduce the risk, and leverage just magnifies the risk. You have it. I've watched your show a bunch of times. You understand it all. We may not agree on everything, but you got all the fundamentals right.
All right, that's awesome. Patrick Byrne from Overstock.com. Great to have you here with us at the Young Turks on Occupy Wall Street.
My honor, James. All right.
Can you see that? We can come to agreement, okay? America, we can do better. All right, thank you.
So that was, whether you heard it or not, I don't know. God, I hope you did. It's a really good interview. It's in several places. It's on currenttv.com, the Young Turks video section, where he's got the whole, it's not a real long interview. It's 4 minutes long. But, you know, he admits point blank that he is a one percenter. And, you know, he thinks that everybody's getting screwed. And you know, how can you put the man down when he agrees? You know, he friggin' agrees that we're all getting hosed. It's becoming more and more obvious that we are getting hosed. And, you know, that's the saddest part of all is, you know, people will admit it except for the 1% and the politicians in D.C. So, it's pretty pathetic when you got to have somebody like him speaking out. And he has spoke out very, very often because I pulled up his name the other night trying to download that video. And, I found probably about 10 or 15 different videos where he has spoken out about the 1% and about the greed on Wall Street. So this man isn't quiet about it, and you got to give him props about it. The other big thing that's happening today, besides the Black Friday, all the crap that the big box stores are trying to sell us, are the massive protests going on in Egypt. And that's a big, big deal because that's been happening for the last couple of days, and it's just getting worse and worse. Where they're actually, the military is under a huge amount of protests. Interesting enough, Obama, of course, is supporting the protesters in Egypt, God knows he's not supporting the protesters here in the United States, but he is supporting the protesters in Egypt. And I find that incredibly fucking ironic. He even released a statement on it, I guess. It says here on Peace I'm Reading, it says the U.S. increased pressure on Friday on Egypt's military rulers to hand over power to civilian leaders, and the generals turned to a Mubarak-era politician to head a new government in a move that failed to satisfy the more than 100,000 protesters who jammed into Tahrir Square in the biggest rally yet this week. The demonstrators rejected the appointment of Kamal el-Ganzouri as prime minister, breaking into chants of illegitimate, and setting up a showdown between the two sides only 3 days before key parliamentary elections. The size of the rally and the resilience of the protesters in the face of the violence used against them by security forces in this week's deadly street battles have won back for the movement much of the strength it projected during the 18-day uprising that ousted President Hosni Mubarak in February. So they had 18 days it took them to get rid of Mubarak, whereas Occupy Wall Street's been hanging in there for well over 2 months now, and all we get in the news is the anything negative they can find. It's that good old-fashioned if it leads, it bleeds line. You still have to look for alternative forms of information to find out the truth on what's really happening, and how big their Occupy Wall Street's various city protest movements are, because you're sure as hell not going to get it from the corporate media. I was looking today, and the only thing I saw on TV today were they were actually blaming Occupy Wall Street protesters for violence that was happening at these these Black Friday events, saying that it was the Occupy Wall Street protesters that were starting it, and you know, all kinds of other happy horse shit, which is quite interesting, since that's one of the main guidelines of their whole force is, you know, nonviolence. So you know, you don't want to, unfortunately, a vast majority of America is getting their information in 30-second news bites from the corporate media, and the corporate media is, you know, along with Fox News and the 1% are doing their best to, you know, to make everybody who supports OWS look like, you know, dirty hippies and violent, ignorant people. And, you know, you and I know that's all bullshit. Obama, like I said, is, you know, opening up his pie hole now and saying how much he appreciates, you know, and how much America is backing everything that the Egyptian protesters are doing. You know, God forbid he says a damn thing about the police brutality that's been happening, you know, against all of us here. I say us. I haven't been out there. I can't because of my back, but I am a supporter of the movement. But he has yet to say anything substantial about how we're trying to be, how the OWS movement is trying to be silenced, and how the agent provocateurs are coming out there and creating bullshit and mayhem, and the corporate media is trying to pin it all on the OWS movement. The guy that going back to Egypt, which has been on all the televisions today, the guy who the military stuck in there as prime minister was actually the prime minister between 1996 and 1999, and he was a deputy prime minister and a planning minister before that, and he also spent time in the as Mubarak's defense minister. So he's really, in my view or my estimation, not a whole lot different than Mubarak. You know, he's still a bag of shit, just like Mubarak was. And he also said in a televised news conference that the military has given him greater powers than his predecessor, and that he wouldn't have accepted the job if he believed Tanwani had any intention of staying in power. I believe Tanwani, Tan Tantwani is the head of the military there. And the people in Egypt are saying, hey, we're tired of waiting for the elections. We want them now. Plus, we don't like this jackass that you stuck in there as our prime minister. The article I'm reading from says, Friday's protests in Tahrir was dubbed by organizers as the last chance million man protest. Swelling crowds were chanting, leave, leave, and the people want to bring down the field marshal. El Baradei was mobbed by hundreds of supporters as he arrived in the square and took part in Friday's prayers, leaving shortly afterwards. Some factions of the protests have cited El Baradei as a possible member of a civilian presidential council they want to replace the generals with. He is here to support the revolutionaries, said protester Ahmed Awad, 35. He came to see for himself the tragedy caused by the military. And they've killed, I don't know, at least 40 people, and I'm quite sure it's higher than that, but maybe it was 40 people they killed this week. I'm not sure. There's 500 protesters camped out in front of the cabinet office there in Egypt, vowing to remain there to prevent that guy's government from entering the building. And thousands of pro-democracy protesters also rallied in other cities in Egypt, including at least 10,000 in Alexandria and smaller crowds in Luxor and Assuet in southern Egypt. The military, they're not real happy with this, and the military has rejected calls to immediately step down, saying its claim to power is supported by the warm welcome given to troops who took over the streets from the discredited police early in the anti-Mubarak uprising, as well as an overwhelming endorsement for constitutional amendments they proposed in a March referendum. Well, that's before they came into power and it all got into their heads, you know, before they all got hot and bothered and started cracking down on these guys. So, you know, it's getting ugly again in Egypt, and it's going to continue to get ugly. And like I said, Obama, bless his little black heart, is, taking to the television and telling everybody how he's supporting all these guys. And, you know, he thinks that, you know, we as Americans, we should be supporting them too. And, you know, God forbid he says anything at all about supporting any of us. You know, his whole deal is that, you know, Egypt should be protected, but our First Amendment rights to protest don't mean anything to him. And the fact that he got mic checked in New Hampshire, I hope sent him a big friggin' message the other day. I hope it really did. He laughed and kind of joked it off, but I'm sure it hit him because he was the first Democrat that I know of who's been mic checked, because they've mic checked a hell of a lot of the GOP clowns lately, and those guys haven't been nice to the mic checkers. Some of them have gotten really, really ugly. So, that's basically what I've got going on today. I figured those were the things I was really going to go off about. I don't know if there's a whole lot more that I have to say, because I don't think there's a whole lot of people listening today. It is, after all, a long weekend for everybody, and, people are with their family and their friends, and a lot of people are driving back and forth hundreds of miles, you know, to be with their families and things like that. So I don't plan on being on the air very long. I played the, although I don't know how well you could hear it, I do apologize for that. The interview that Sank had with Patrick Byrne from CEO, who supports the Occupy Wall Street movement and is part of the 1%. And I did talk about the arrest of Gupta, the former Goldman Sachs board member accused of insider trading. So other than that, I don't have a whole lot left to say. Thank you very much for listening. I know we haven't been on the air long today, but hey, it's Friday, and it's a long weekend. There's going to be a lot of people out there. I did want to read you a piece from a blog that I've just recently discovered. It's part of the Greenville Post group of blogs. The editor-in-chief is Rowan Wolf. Patrice Greenville who obviously runs the Greenbelt Post, is the publisher. And the name of the blog is Cyrano's Journal Today. And he's got a piece up that's called OWS, Too Big to Fail. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, we are too big to fail. OWS is too big to fail. If they can use that term for friggin' Wall Street, they damn sure should be able to use it for OWS. When you can figure we had 30,000 people there last week when they tore apart the encampment at Zuccotti Park, they sure paid hell for it the next day. So this article over at Cyrano's Journal Today is called OWS Too Big to Fail, and it's by Stephen Lendem. It says, an idea whose time has come resonates globally. November 17th marks 2 months since beginning in New York. Earlier, Middle East and European protests inspired it. Now it's spreading everywhere across North and South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, and Oceania. In America, within weeks, hundreds of large and small cities, in all 50 states, got involved. Protesters weathered storms, they weathered snow, rain, cold, pepper spray, tear gas, beatings, arrests, and evictions. Police confrontations, in fact, inspired even larger amounts. As I just said, good old Mayor Micah, nobody's a better person at bringing out the OWS supporters than Mayor Mikey Bloomberg. Let me continue on the article. Mother Jones magazine said participants represent a horizontal, autonomous, leaderless, modified consensus-based system with roots in anarchist thought. In fact, they're revolutionaries in the best sense of the term. They've tapped into the rising feeling among many Americans that economic opportunity has been squashed by corporate greed and the influence of the very rich in politics. One protester's sign read, you can't shut down occupation, we're everywhere. Another one said, you cannot evict an idea whose time has come. And still another sign lifted high read, occupy everything. In fact, it's long overdue after decades of social injustice heading America towards bananic republicanization. Sorry, I'm not speaking well. Weather disparity is extreme. Ordinary people are increasingly marginalized, exploited, and left on their own to survive, sink, or swim. Jobs are harder than ever to find. Good-paying ones, which pay living wages and benefits, are disappearing. College students end up debt-entrapped for life. Super-rich crooks and corrupt politicians conspire to grab everything for themselves. Freedom is an endangered species. And motherfuckers, that is the truth. That is something we need to put on a sign. Freedom is an endangered species. I'll continue the article. Growing poverty, hunger, homelessness, and despair are increasing. State, federal, and local officials plan budget cuts instead of help. Human deprivation isn't discussed in high places, only ways to grab more wealth and power. In plain sight, America is no longer fit to live here. To live in. Neither are other Western countries, depriving the many just for the few. Targeting Wall Street, corporate greed, and power brokers in high places, OWS protesters demand change. November 17th marked 2 months of activism. 2 months, people, 2 months. OccupyWallStreet.org called it a historic day of action for the 99%. In New York, over 30,000 rallied. The New York Police Department estimated 32,500 people. Likely it was thousands more, the most anywhere in America so far in 1 day. Protesters sense a powerful and diverse civic movement for social justice, and it's on the ascent. Hopefully they're right. One protester spoke for others, saying, our political system should serve all of us, not just the very rich and powerful. Right now, Wall Street owns Washington. We are left out, meaning the 99 cent, and we are here to reclaim our democracy. Dozens of other cities participated nationwide and globally. Occupy police even got involved. Now, see, this is something new, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to read this article. There's actually a website called OccupyPolice.org. I'm going to continue reading the article now. Occupy police got involved. They call themselves part of the 99%. An anonymous sergeant said, and I quote, "I'm a cop and I support the ideal of Occupy. We're on the same team." Halla fucking Lula for that. The article goes on. A website logo reads, "We are the 99% protecting 100%. Philadelphia Police Captain Ray Lewis, who I talked about last week, joined New York's OWS and got arrested. He vowed to stay involved and then when released. He doesn't fear arrest, he said, when people are starving or freezing to death on our streets. All the cops are just workers for the 1% and don't even realize they're being exploited, he said. As soon as I'm let out of jail, I'll be right back there and they'll have to arrest me again." Occupy Marines, which is a website, occupymarines.org, are involved, saying they'll support the movement. "We will support demonstrators with organization, direction, supply, and logistics and leadership." They feature a logo saying Semper Occupare. They also highlight Operation Returning Freedom, including a new common sense charter for equality and participation in government for change. They represent the 99% collective conscience against oligarchic America. Occupy veterans, Veterans for Peace, Occupy writers, and Occupy filmmakers are also involved. So are people from all walks of life who care and want change. Fordham University professor Paul Levinson said OWS represents direct democracy. Cornell University professor Cornell West called it a democratic awakening. Over 1,000 writers signed an online petition which said, "We, the undersigned writers, and all who will join us, support Occupy Wall Street and the Occupy movement around the world." Celebrities are involved, getting involved as well, including, of course, Pete Seeger, Joan Baez, and Arlo Guthrie. Slovenian philosopher, whose name I cannot pronounce, Slavoj Zizek said, "They tell you we are dreamers. The true dreamers are those who think things can go on indefinitely the way they are. We are not dreamers. We are awakening from a dream which is turning into a nightmare." World systems analyst Emmanuel Wallerstein called OWS the most important political happening in the United States since the uprisings in 1968. Conditions are right. Accurately calculated, not census data based on a long out-of-date threshold. Poverty in America affects 100 million or more, and it's rising. Unemployment's at 23%. Over 26 million Americans wanting work can't find it. Nothing is being done to help them, which means us. Every social measure shows depression-level human need. America's middle class is its working poor. People everywhere in need are mad, and global protests show it. It doesn't really matter what spark ignited things. They're happening, growing, and inspiring others because real grievances demand addressing responsibly at a time politicians are turning a blind eye. Ask what they wanted. People said long denied justice, which is something that I have said that they have wanted from day one. They want justice. They want justice when it comes to equality. They want financial justice. I can name you half a dozen different types of justice they want. I'll continue reading the article now. Even the initially dismissive New York Times said, "Extreme inequality is the hallmark of a dysfunctional economy, dominated by a financial sector that is driven as much by speculation, gouging, and government backing as by productive investment." It was a remarkable admission by the nation's leading establishment broadsheet, Wealth and Power's longstanding voice. And you have to admit that for the New York Times to say that. According to Wallerstein, the movement has become respectable, but with that comes quote-unquote danger. Already, federal, state, and local overt and covert counterattacks are apparent. And we all know about that because we talk about that on this show Monday through Sunday. Success also breeds other problems, including a diversity of views. At issue is not becoming, quote, the cilia of being a tight cult, too narrowly based, and the charbadus of no longer having a political coherence because it is too broad, unquote. No simple way exists to avoid either extreme or other pitfalls. One is lack of leadership, including a national voice like Martin Luther King for civil rights. Another is a coherent, unified message focusing on what matters most. It is not enough to denounce Wall Street and corporate greed. The key is demanding real solutions and sustaining long-term struggle. This one's the mother of them all. Most important is returning money power to public hands where it belongs. Without it, little else is possible long-term. It's vital to make banking a public utility. Break up the too-big-to-fail giants. Close or nationalize insolvent ones. Establish laws and regulations that have teeth and prosecute crooks when they're caught, especially high-level ones, so that everyone knows that grand theft will not be tolerated. Other key issues include ending corporate personhood, getting money out of politics, ending duopoly power and imperial wars, making corporations and the rich pay their fair share, enforcing government, in fact, to be of, by, and for everyone, not solely for America's privilege like it is now. None of this can happen short term, people. Perhaps decades are needed to transform America into a socially new society. In other words, little is accomplished by achieving things part way. Total change is needed. Softening today's system won't work. It never did before, and it won't work now because gains are easily lost. Wage slavery replaced its chattel antecedent. Hard-won labor, civil, and social gains are gone, and they are. Or are on the chopping block to disappear, as we know they are in Ohio and Wisconsin and God knows how many other fucking states. The article goes on to say, so are voting rights when corporate controlled machines do it for us, yet does it matter under a duopoly money controlled system offering no choice whatsoever? Wallenstein believes that the movement may go from strength to strength. Perhaps it, quote unquote, can force short-term restructuring of what the government will actually do to minimize real pain people experience, unquote. Longer term, perhaps people will be able to address capitalism's structural crisis and the major geopolitical transformations now occurring in a multipolar world. Even if OWS wanes, its legacy will last, like the uprisings of 1968. Better times are possible. Change never comes easily or quickly. Enough committed people can make a difference. OWS is making a difference. Indeed, building a global movement is significant. Key, though, is giving it legs in the face of exhaustion, in the face of cold winters, police repression, and political leaders paying it little more than lip service so far while they slash social justice programs and continue serving wealth and power interests at the expense of all else. Off to an impressive start, what's ahead for OWS isn't known. Given the state of today's America and where it's heading, the stakes are too high for failure. There's no turning back now. Now, the gentleman who wrote this, Stephen Lendman, lives in Chicago, and he can be reached at lendmanstephen@sbcglobal.net. You can also visit his blog site at slendman.blogspot.com and listen to his quote-unquote cutting-edge discussions with distinguished guests on the Progressive Radio News Hour on the Progressive Radio Network Thursdays at 10 a.m. U.S. Central Time and Saturdays and Sundays at noon. All programs are archived for easy listening. So that is how I'm going to end today's lovely little, you know, show by reading you something that I hope gives you a little, you know, lift. That the OWS movement is here to stay. There's nothing nobody should be able to do to stop us. And that slowly but surely the 1%, at least some of them, like Patrick Byrne, they do support us, and they're standing out there telling people that they support us and why. So I want you all to have a good weekend, what's left of it. The show will be back on tomorrow. I'm not sure what time. You can look it up. It's somewhere down the page somewhere, all the different dates of the shows. But you all take care of yourself and have a good time. I'm going to go ahead and go out of the show with the same show with the same song that I opened up with, which was Nickelback playing We All Need to Stand Together. So y'all, whoops, wait a minute. There's some people holding on. Let me see who's on the line here. Area code 608, you're on the line. Hello, 608, you're on. How about area code 718?
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hi. I see you're ending the show early today. My name is Slav Dean from New York City.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you very much for calling in. How can I help you? What would you like to talk about?
Well, thank you. No, it seems like, it seems like, you know, progressive politics and I say you're a supporter of the, you know, these protests, appeals, if you will, to the 1% on behalf of the 99%. I'm in agreement with it. I just share with you, I was listening to another show, a conservative talk show. Hello?
I'm still here. Keep talking.
Yeah, I was listening to another show, a conservative talk show on Blog Talk Radio. Yesterday, I listened to it briefly, and the host of the show stated that...
Wait a minute, sir, let me interrupt you for a minute. What's your area code? What's your area code?
718.
Okay, hold on a minute. I'm going to put this other guy on hold.
Okay.
Okay, there. Now,
yeah,
go ahead. Yeah, somebody else. I had two lines open at once, and I couldn't hear you worth a damn.
Okay. No, I was just saying that you know, I'm in agreement with the motives and, you know, the goals of the, you know, the 99% movement and, you know, the protesters who, you know, who had been dispersed in Zuccotti Park here in New York City, you know,
mm-hmm.
the anti-Wall Street movement. And no, I was just sharing with you that I was listening to another show yesterday. I wasn't sure what the topic of the show was. I called in and I was listening to it, and the host of the show had indicated that he read, as you had done,
mm-hmm.
an article whereby, I think it was a Republican presidential candidate, I think it was Newt Gingrich, in fact.
Oh, God.
and he was stating this, again, and this conservative, self-proclaimed conservative host of this BTR show had stated that everyone's goal in this country should be to become a... One of the 1%.
Ah, Jesus.
I thought, well, gee, you know, this guy is really. Do you really believe that materialism, egocentric narcissism, is really the goal? Should be the goal of all humanity to want to be superior. You know, to want to be superior to other people. You know, to have this alpha male or this primitive competitive. You know,
bullshit. This
attitude of survival of the fittest, this very primitive, primordial attitude, is that the goal of people? Is that what the American dream is about? If it is, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Me either. I don't want to be a nation-building warmonger. I don't want to be one. There's no fucking way I want to be one of those. I never want to be one. I don't care if my dad died tomorrow, bless his heart, and left me $10 million. I wouldn't become one of those. I wouldn't. Have you been down to Zuccotti Park?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually a yellow taxi driver. And I would drive by and see, you know, I mean, it's really just one block. Zuccotti Park is like one small city block. And to think of this one small city block was the had become the archetype for all these other, you know.
Hundreds of
similar movements all over the world. It was really kind of mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing. It's totally mind-blowing. I live in Bakersfield, California, which is in the south end of the San Joaquin Valley, and it's basically the shithole of California. We're run by the Republican Party. We have been since the beginning of time, and we have occupiers that go out every single day. They were even out yesterday, and they hold their signs, and people drive by and honk. And they believe in the movement, you know. And so everywhere in the United States, if Bakersfield can get involved, then every city in America can get involved. And it all started, like you said, and I didn't realize that Zuccotti Park was that small. Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
God, that's interesting.
You know, they've been dispersed by the police. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Dispersed. Yeah, unfortunately. You know, and
they can't have tents there anymore. All they can do is show up, and they have to stay awake if they're there all night. It's disgusting. Mayor Mikey is doing everything he can to shut them down.
Bloomberg.
Yeah, good old Mayor Mikey. He really wants to shut them down, but you know what? Every time he does something like that, he makes the movement stronger. Do you believe that?
Oh yeah, that which does not destroy us makes us stronger, because. You know, and there are people who even sometimes some people on the left who say, well, it's not enough, or, you know, we have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. What it grows into may become more organized, more effective, more focused, but it's a beginning.
It is.
To get people to come together, awareness, you know, a cause to rally around. So I don't disparage those people who want to disparage what they're doing. Or people who don't agree with what the motives anyway. It's not just their modus operandi, the strategy is not the problem for these people. It's just their motives, period. And I just don't understand how average people could look at what they're doing in a negative way. I think sometimes you ever meet people who seem to be very articulate, but and when you listen to them speak, their mode of reasoning is so specious that they really are stupid.
Yes. No. I have relatives like that, honey. Believe me, I do.
Very articulate, you know, and they can quote Newt Gingrich. Look at who they're quoting, though. They're quoting Sean Hannity, you know, Glenn Beck, you know, Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
These are
the
authorities that they're quoting, right. You know.
Yes, and they're authorities. I don't know who made them authorities except for Fox News, but somebody made them authorities on everything in the world. They really did.
But mention real educated people like Noam Chomsky, who's the 8th most quoted person in the world, and they disparage him. Mention Howard Zinn, you know. Mention Chris Hedges, you know. Mention Ralph Nader, educated people. They will disparage. They will dispel. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. So, you know what I mean? It's really mind-boggling, the stupidity.
Well,
that
the only
prevails
thing they have
in our
to come
culture.
Back with, when you mention those people to them, which I've tried in vain sometimes to argue with right-wingers, when I bring up the names of the people you mentioned, all they come back with is they're communists or they're fascists. They don't know a damn thing about what those people wrote or said, but what they tell me is they're commies and they're fascists, so fuck them, you know, and that's all they have to come back with, because they don't know anything about their writings. They don't learn anything about those people.
No.
They don't. It's incredible.
It is incredible, you know, and as you said, it sort of was like, you ever listen to, sometimes I listen to Pinko the Bear, sometimes he can be a bit extreme, but I listen to him sometimes. He calls, I guess, like Pink, calls them truth tellers, you know, Tariq Ali.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people like that, you know, sometimes George Galloway, MP, and, you know, some of them. But yeah, these are people who tell the truth no matter, you know, even if it's not popular, you know.
Yeah.
And as you said, most of us, a lot of those people, conservatives, have a very, I think, infantile mentality, and they have this attitude towards the leadership that they follow it, and if they're fearful of change, you know, they've been indoctrinated and not really educated. They've been miseducated. You know, and they actually believe that the government and the leadership is, you know, they defer to all authority pretty much. I mean, they're thinking I really cannot follow it because it is so convoluted that, I don't know, what do you think?
No. I totally agree with what you're saying. It's they're not educated. They're indoctrinated. That was an incredibly telling remark by you, that because they are. They're not educated at all. I mean, Fox News listeners are some of the most uneducated people in the United States, and that's pathetic. It makes you sad when you think about it, because they've got a huge viewership, a huge audience, you know, and it scares me to think of how many of my neighbors live there, you know, sitting there, living in their houses and watch those idiots every night spew their bullshit when there's no facts behind anything that they say. Not one fact behind anything they say. And the corporate media is what pisses me off the most, which is why this show here, Be Monsters, broadcasts every single day at the same time to tell you about the good things about OWS. We tell you about the good things. We warn you about the bad things. On Tuesday, which is my regular day, I talked about nothing but the police brutality that has been going on. And that is something that's been planned in our recent past. They're actually having conference calls between 17 and 18 police commissioners at a time from different cities on how to quote unquote quell the protesters, you know, how to get them out of town, you know. So they'll do anything in their power to shut us up. And so I don't believe they can. As hard as they try, it just makes us stronger. It really does. I really believe that.
Wow. You know, you said a mouthful, really. I agree 100%. It's really scary, you know.
It is scary.
You know, as you said, I think a lot of the backwardness and again, I make these, you know, out of frustration, you know, I'm highly critical of, you know, many of, you know, those, what is it, the conservative, are those the blue states or the red ones? I forget which one.
The conservatives, the red states.
The red states, okay. The red states, right, okay. So those red states, you know, that those people are, they are, have been, you know, really brainwashed in the propaganda, not just in the media, but from way back, you know, the McCarthy era. You know, have been weaned on stereotypes, ad hominem statements, falsehoods, bigotry. You know, the basis of their thinking has already, their mentalities have been, are such that the Rush Limbaughs, I mean, imagine a Rush Limbaugh who is the courtier of you know, a preeminent spokesperson for this agenda, this mentality that is really getting these people, so-called self-proclaimed conservatives, really gets them to vote against their own interests. And even I was talking to somebody, you know, I'm a veteran. You know, I was in the military from 91 to 97, and I hear people say, support our troops. And I say, well, you know, have you ever considered that, you know, our troops are not really now fighting for, you know, freedom. They're now fighting for being used as a mercenary force to fight against, to consolidate the capitalist grip on the planet. So
nation building. They're not.
They're not at all. They're not fighting for our interests. So again, even by joining the military now, you've even heard of the Winter Soldier movement. Don't join the military now, I tell them. You know, if you want to support the troops, bring them back. You know, if you want to support the truth, stop allowing American troops to be used, you know, to subjugate other, you know, neo-imperialism and subjugating other nations for the benefit of the multinational corporations that don't give a damn about American citizens. They're just using America as a base of operations because America's still the most powerful militaristically, but they don't care anything about the average person. So the more power they acquire, the weaker and the more compromised will be the average American citizen's quality of life. So even joining the military, we're undermining our own happiness, the pursuit of happiness. So
and you're right, and sadly, a lot of people have to join the military to make a living and pay their mortgage these days. I've known too many people that have to do that, and they hate it. Because they know what they're doing. They know exactly like you said that they're supporting the project for what is it? The PNAC. I don't even know if they're around anymore. The Project for a New American Century. That was the one that Dick Cheney and all his little buddies founded that put out the whole doctrine on how we were going to do nation building and take over the world so that the world would listen, the world would do our bidding for us. And that's basically what the PNA stood for. And that was during the Nixon administration that all that shit started. And it's been going on ever since, you know. And Bill Clinton didn't help matters any. I mean, I know he was a Democrat, but I'm registered as a declined estate because of Bill Clinton. I think he was one of the best presidents the Republicans ever had. And that's pretty pathetic when you consider he has a D behind his name. And he does a lot of good now as a civil servant, so not civil servant, as a private citizen, so to speak. But the fact remains, he was one of the people that started cutting on welfare. And I'm not saying welfare is a good thing, and I've never been on welfare because I refuse to go through the bullshit they put you through just to get a few months help when you need it, you know. And that's the saddest part. And now the whole thing is, well, we got to cut the budget because we're spending too much money. Why don't you bring everybody home from Afghanistan and fucking Iraq, and we'll see how much fucking money we save then, and get rid of those fucking Bush tax cuts, and I bet you we save a hell of a lot of money getting rid of those. And yes, other people's taxes might go up a little bit too, but the taxes will really go up on those one percenters, and that's when you'll start seeing money come back into the federal coffers because nobody can afford to spend it right now. When we go to buy eggs, my husband and I, who are below the poverty limit, when we go to buy eggs, we just cringe because we go, my God, look at the friggin' price of buying a damn dozen of eggs.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And that's the kind of stuff that the OWS movement is fighting for. That's an injustice. That's a financial injustice, you know. They're looking for equality as far as financial equality and judicial equality and just, you know, equality in the lives of the 99% of us who are getting screwed six ways from Sunday by the 1% who control our government and control our world. We really are. I mean, how else can you put it?
You know, you said so much. Really, it's you know, the injustices and, you know, in terms of our quality of life. And I think a lot of Americans are so intent. Again, those people who are not, you know, who are not analytic, you know, who just think in terms, you know, these ad hominem and stereotypes and, you know, and sound bites and don't really really analyze the situation and reflect on what's going on. And look at the cause and effect, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, you know, in terms of, you know, just these basic issues of, you know, food and clothing, shelter, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people who are in our circles, you know, average working people who are struggling, identify with the 1%. Like Joe the plumber, a man who was unemployed, was angry. Because Barack Obama wanted to, and I am not a fan of Barack Obama, like you said. You know, he is just an extension of, you know, it's good cop, bad cop, so to speak.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, you know, but you know, a Joe the plumber who was unemployed, who was angry because Barack Obama, you know, when he was campaigning, wanted to raise the taxes for people whose income was over $250,000 a year.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
it was absurd. And that's what the Republicans are building their entire campaign on right now, that we can't do that because those are the people who are going to create jobs for us. Well, it didn't work under George Bush, who I call the shrub. It didn't work under the shrub. It sure as fuck isn't going to work under President Obama. I'm sorry. We've already tried it, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
And it certainly didn't work under Reagan, the trickle-down theory,
yeah.
Reaganomics, supply-side economics. I mean, he's the one who, like, coined those phrases, right? In the 80s,
yeah.
They were nigged. We gave them corporate welfare, gave them a lot of tax breaks. And when they started outsourcing, they could care less about
mm-hmm.
it. So, I mean, we're going to – you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results.
Exactly.
I mean, come on. I mean, what are we going to do? At some point, we need to realize that those people, that their wealth and the capitalism in general, in essence and spirit, is the protection of the and the promotion of wealth by an extreme few at the expense of the many. I mean, that's
exactly.
what it's done. It's not just accumulation of wealth. It's done at our expense.
Yep.
You know,
you're right.
So they simply, yeah. So I don't care if you're wealthy. Like, you got a Michael Moore who's a rich person, but he's not doing it by exploiting people. By using loopholes to harm people. Free market is not. It's not exclusively capitalism. Capitalism actually is a monopoly. It is not free market. So I mean, and that's just how it is. You know, hashes itself out. So I think there are a lot of distortions in terms of understanding what is free market, what capitalism really is, you know?
Yeah.
Capitalist societies. Now, we now live in a fast, like you said, the police forces throughout the nation collaborating in their efforts. It's becoming more a fascist society. Our society is becoming fascist.
It is. No, it yeah. is. You're right. And that's what bothered me, and I talked about it last Tuesday, was how the police departments, ever since 9/11, they've treated us all like we're terrorists. If we don't go along with the program, then we're a terrorist, and they treat us that way. And to me, that's bullshit, because we're not terrorists. We want everybody to be able to have a decent life. And when a kid gets out of college at the age of 23 and he's $40,000 in debt, how the hell is he? And he has to move back into mommy and daddy's house, so he's not buying a new house. He's not buying furniture for that house. You know, he's not having children. He's not building a life. He's trying to pay off that fucking student loan. You know, is what he's trying to do. And that's the stuff that a lot of these kids. That's why I call them kids, because I'm 50 something. But that's what started a lot of this for those kids was, you know, they went to college like they were supposed to, and all they got was a big fucking bill. They didn't get jobs because all those jobs are outsourced to China and India and anywhere else that they can find people that will do it for a lot less, and they don't have any laws that protect people, you know, against child labor or, you know, or working for, you know, 20 hours a day or anything else. So, you know, I'm a nationalist in the respect that I feel we should tax the hell out of any corporation that outsources a job. I really believe that. I really believe that. I'm sorry. And some people get pissed because they think being a nationalist is a bad thing. But in that respect, I think it's a good thing because they're taking advantage of the fact that we allow them to have their Nikes built and made in China, and then they ship them back into our country and charge, Christ, $100 for a pair of friggin' tennis shoes, you know? Mm. It's ridiculous.
It's terrible.
It is. It's horrible. But I do really appreciate you calling in. I really,
thank
really do.
Thank you so much. It's
and
a
thank
pleasure.
You for listening. And like I
my
said,
pleasure.
we're here every day, Monday through Friday at the same time. I don't remember what time we're on the weekends. And and I do the Tuesday show. They probably put me on because I got a big mouth and I can talk forever. My name's
I like what you're saying.
Well, thank you very much. Well, you have
thank
a good
you.
Weekend, and and I hope you listen again.
I certainly will.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, area code 608, did you want to talk?
Yeah, I did.
Great. How can I help you? This is Dusty.
Yeah. I wanted to tell a little story about my life here.
Okay.
Kind of relating to the topic. I'm an airline pilot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And... Oh.
Did I lose you?
No.
Oh, good.
I'm an airline pilot, and I do barrel rolls.
Okay.
I'm just thinking that because of the job, it's not really going to affect how many people are flying nowadays.
If you have your radio on, your online radio on, you need to turn it off.
Like this?
Because you keep breaking up really bad. That's the only reason I'm thinking you got your online radio on at the same time.
No, I just wait before I talk because I'm...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was thinking. When people don't have enough money, they're not going to have... Okay, the way to fix this whole job market thing is we just need to construct some additional pylons.
And that's going to do what?
Once you construct additional pylons, it's going to put more money into the economy, and it's just going to stimulate the economy.
How is it going to stimulate the economy?
Yeah, I don't think you understand what I'm trying to say here.
No, I don't. That's why I'm asking you questions. How is that going to stimulate the economy by making more pylons?
We need to construct them. And when we construct them for other people, money will go out to the 9% instead of the 1%.
But we don't want money to go to the 1%. We want it to go to the 99%.
That's what I said. I said it's going to go to the 99% instead of the 1% if we construct the pylons.
So you think the entire United States should just make pylons?
That's not what I'm saying, okay? I'm saying that we need to construct pylons for each other.
What else should we make besides pylons?
Not much.
Not much? Okay. We need what?
We need to construct additional pylons.
I think that guy was a jackass, so I'm sorry I hung up on him. He waited 11 minutes to say that shit. Anyway, thank you for nothing. I don't think the whole United States building pylons is going to solve anything, jackass. But anyhow, I'm going to let you all go. Y'all have a good evening, a good weekend, and the show will be back on tomorrow. I don't remember what time, but we're on at 5 o'clock Monday through Friday. I will be here again on Tuesday. My name is Dusty. My website is leftwingnutjob.net. The show is brought to you by Roundtree7.com. That's the number 7. They are the people who bring this show, Here Be Monsters, to you every day of the week. As long as there are protesters out there protesting Occupy Wall Street, the show will be on the air. Y'all have a good day, and we're going to end the show with the song I started it with, which is Nickelback, which is We All Need to Stand Together.